and holding on Lamed Zayin and Beis, 5 lines from the bottom. We left off yesterday in a discussion. We were talking about the question of Brera. We talked about that Rav Yochanan and Rav Oshia, well, also we had Rav and Shmuel, but then we talked about Rav Yochanan and Rav Oshia, are arguing about if you have two people bought a barrel of wine or two people bought an animal before Yom Tov, whose tchum does it go according to when they split it? Do we say that each one gets his own? Yesh Brera, we say that retroactively this was meant to be his portion all along, or no? So we had Rav Yochanan had said that Rav Hoshia had said yes, Brera, so yes, once they divide it, then you can retroactively consider it was that way from the beginning of Yom Tov, it acquired that tchum at the beginning of Yom Tov, and Rav Yochanan said not. We asked from that Mishnah that talked about the case, the mess in the house. And by the way, I said yesterday that this din about the mess in the house, this din about taking out the mess through everything under the doors is tamei, was dirabanan. And actually, Rashi said that earlier in the Masechta. Rashi earlier in the Masechta had said that it's dirabanan. Here, actually, Rashi talks about that. Ultimately, based on the discussion over here, it's going to come out that this is actually halacha l'moshe misina. We're going to get to that soon. So, which, of course, therefore, Mefarshim asks, so why is Rashi contradicting himself?
Here he says it's the raisa,
it's halacha l'moshe misina. There he says it's the rabbana.
Where is
it? In the first parak, we have the same thing about the dead body in the house and which door you're going to take it out of. There's a number of different ways to look at it. The one answer that's given is it depends which amoda's opinion we're talking about over here. Before we were talking about in parak Aleph, we were talking according to Rava. Here we're talking according to Rav Hoshia. Rava, we see from the discussion over there, clearly holds the Brera. So therefore, we have to say that it must be Dirabanan, because by Dirabanan it's possible to say Brera, which is what we're going to end up saying today. Whereas here, when we're talking according to Rav Hoshia, where we want to say that he does not hold the Brera, then Rashi wants to say that it's halacha l'moshe misina.
In other words, Rashi goes
according to... So Rashi is according to each shitta, right. That within that itself, there's different shittas about whether it's Dirabanan or Deraita. Another way of looking at it is just that Sometimes even something which is halacha l'moshe misina, which is not explicitly written in the Torah, can be called in a loose sense dirabanan. Although there Rashi uses the expression that the chachamim made a gzeira, so it's hard to say that. And then there's yet another answer, that there is a difference, that midaraisa, there is the concept that whichever door you end up taking mess out of, that everything in that doorway is tamei. Even now, it's only midrabanan, this that we apply it to all the doorways.
So it would be just that.
Doorway. It would just be that doorway. How long would it be? The rabbanon is that it applies to all of them. Yeah. So yeah, we're starting now. I was just giving a background of where we left off yesterday. So we ended up saying we asked then from the discussion there, it seems that Rav Hoshia does not hold the Brera and Rav Yochanan does. So that contradicts what we just said. We're holding so we said Epoch. We said let's flip it around. Rav Hoshia says there's ain't Brera and Rav Yochanan says there is. And that's where we're holding. 5 lines from the bottom, Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. Is it true though that Rabbi Yochanan holds of Brera? Brothers who divided their father's inheritance, they're considered buyers relative to each other, and they have to return their portions to each other in Yovel. Meaning, what happens when, so the brothers divide up the Yerusha, it ends up then one person gets this field, one person gets that field, but you can't say that all along, from when the father died, that we can say that now when Reuven gets this particular field, that retroactively from when the father died, we consider that was meant to be his portion all along. No, we consider that only at some point when they actually divided the Yerusha, that's when that decision was made. He gets this one, Shimon gets another one, etc. But therefore, it means effectively it's like they bought the field from each other. Originally, this field belonged in common to everybody, and now Reuben bought it from the other brothers. Shimon bought this other one, etc. Therefore, they have to return it to each other in Yovel. What does it mean they have to return it to each other in Yovel? Actually, the Kesef Mishnah says there on the Rambam in Hilchos Shemitah of Yovel. This is actually it's connected with this week's Parasha, actually, because this week's Parasha talks about this whole concept. But the Kesef Mishnah explains it doesn't mean they actually have to they have to redivide everything. It just means they exchange properties. The property that beforehand was they do exchange properties. So the one that was Reuven's up until now, he gives to Shimon and Shimon gives him the
Yeah. Can they get the difference in value with
each other? No, we're talking about the land itself goes back to the owners in Yovel. You can't buy the person off with money. Ki li ha'aretz, the land belongs to the Eibishter.
Right. Once they exchange the Yovel,
so then
forever?
No, then it's until the next Yovel.
And then they have to re-exchange?
Yeah, I mean, practically speaking, you know, eventually some of them are going to die. You know, people don't live forever. So eventually it's going to go to their heirs, and then there's not going to be an issue of having to give it back in Yovel. We're talking as long as one particular generation of heirs is alive, yeah.
Right.
Anyway, so we see from that that Rabbi Yochanan does not hold a Brera. The Chitema, so you might answer, okay, ki lesa Rabbi Yochanan Brera b'daraisa. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan does not hold a Brera when it comes to a din daraisa. Av b'darabanan ispa. Maybe he would say by darabanan, like our case over here about Tumin. But b'darabanan mi islay. But does Rabbi Yochanan hold of Brera by a thing darabanan either? V'hatani ayoy, but ayoy, that was his name, taught a braisa as follows. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Einar Masnal Shnei Dvarim Ke'echad. A person cannot make an Eruv with two Tnoyim for the one thing. So we talked about it back in Eruvin. We learned a concept that the Mishnah had said there that you can put two different Eruvin in different directions because you don't know, for example, a Tamar Kacha might be coming in one direction or the other, and you want to have a choice. Do you want to be able to go to see him and to hear his drasha on Shabbos?
We learned
this way back in Eruvin about a year ago. Yeah.
So
you put it in both directions, and then you decide on Shabbos which one you're going to need. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda says you can't do that. And Ayo explains what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, Eidon Masnal Shein Varim Ke'achad, a person cannot make a tnai on two things at once. Ella, im ba chacham l'mizrach, eruv l'mizrach. So if the chacham comes from the east side, then the eruv to the east, then the eruv to the east side is good. L'mayruv, eruv l'mayruv. And if he makes the eruv, if the chacham came to the west, then the Eruv on the west is the good one. The Yilu Lakan or Lakan Loi. But you can't put down two and make this kind of tonight.
Wait.
And then in Eruv in there, we had a discussion on that. We thought that meant, what does it mean, L'mizrach or L'mayriv? It means that sometime after Shabbos began, the Chacham himself ended up showing up in one or the other of these places. Rashi explains the possibility, let's say, that you might have that, for example, the Chacham shortly before Shabbos was very far away from the city. We learned back in Eruvin that you can recognize a landmark in the distance and declare that your Makom Eruv. So you could have a case, for example, where the Chacham is on his way to the city, but he doesn't manage to reach that landmark until Shabbos begins. When Shabbos began then, he was still far away. But we're saying, nevertheless, because he was able to come within the tchum of the city on Shabbos itself, and you're able to go see him. Tosfos has a different explanation that we could be talking about, that the Chacham was, let's say, over here, and he's able to go either here or here. He's not going to stay over here because, for example, there's no suitable place for him to give his drasha, but he's able to go either here or here and not have to cross the tchum. Either way, the question was, Maishna l'kan l'kan, what's the difference why you can't say you can't make two Eruvin in the two different directions, the Ein Vereira, that we say Ein Vereira, you can't say on Shabbos, after Shabbos began, you can then have the decision made which Eruv is going to be the valid one. Mizrach Ma'ariv Nami Ein Brera. Well, the same thing applies if you have one to the east and one to the west. At the beginning of Shabbos, the Chacham was not yet in the east or not yet in the west. Either according to Rashi, he was far away, he was on his way to the east, but he didn't actually reach there yet. According to Tosfos, on Shabbos itself, he has the option of going east or west. Brera would mean, in other words, what are we saying? We're saying that on Shabbos afternoon, when you want to walk over to hear the Chacham's Drasha, you're saying, now I know the Chacham is on the east side of the city, but retroactively, as of the beginning of Shabbos, then that was the Eruv that I mean to you, not the other one. That's an issue of Brera.
Do you remember when we had the Becher and the mother in the board?
Right.
And we had...
That wasn't an issue of Brera. That was an issue of, you can't check both of them on Yom Tov.
Yeah, but there was one opinion saying, you know, take one, and then take the other, and then alternate.
Right.
That could be considered Brera.
It's not really Brera, though, no, because Brera would be because Brera is that you're retroactively saying that, in that case with the animals, for example, no, it's, there's no Brera, there's no retroactivity involved, because you're bringing up the second one, because you're saying, you know what, I brought up the first one, but it's no good. I changed my mind, basically, yeah. That's not a matter of Brera. Brera is where you had the two options to begin with, basically, yeah.
But at that time, the example you said that can consider both, and then when you take them out, you'll take one or you'll take
both. Yeah, no, but you're ending up taking out both. You're ending up only shechting one because you can, yeah.
Like if you had the opportunity to get one of two lottery tickets, and then you would be able to choose which one you would get afterwards. And
right.
So you would obviously choose the one that's more.
Right, that would be, yeah, okay. Anyway, v'amar Rabbi Yechonon ukvar ba'chacham. So Rabbi Yechonon says, you're right. When Rabbi Yehuda is saying that im ba'chacham l'mizrach, and what Ayo is explaining, is actually talking about where the chacham already came there before Bein HaShemashis. So all it is on Shabbos itself, you found out where he is. It's not that before Shabbos, you didn't. The chacham still had the option of going to one side or the other, or according to Rashi, he had the option of staying far away from the city and not coming. No, before Shabbos, before Bein HaShemashis, the chacham had already come to the east side of the city. All it is you didn't find out until the next morning. Fine, but that's that's different. That's not a matter of Breira,
no.
Because at the beginning of Shabbos, it was definitive, it was established that he's there already. You just didn't know about it till later. That's not a matter of Breira. So we see from that, why is Rabbi Yochanan having to go to the trouble of explaining it that way? Why doesn't he just say, no problem, we can apply Breira? That shows he doesn't apply Breira and Dirabanan things either. Some of Horsham also explained the vote is that since Rabbi Yochanan is going to the trouble of explaining what Rabbi Huda is saying, instead of just saying, okay, look, the halacha is not like Rabbi Huda, finished. The fact that he's bothering to explain him shows that he agrees with this concept of Ein Breira. So we're back to our question then, how is Rabbi Yochanan saying Ein Breira in that case? And in our case, we seem to be saying, he says Yesh Breira, that they buy the barrel of wine in partnership before Yom Tov, they split it on Yom Tov, and each one is allowed to take his half of the wine to his place, even though they have different tumen. Ingmar says, you're right. Elol olam loy tepoch. In fact, don't flip the opinions around. Back to the original idea that Rabbi Hoshia does hold of Breira and Rabbi Yochanan does not. Rabbi Oshia does not hold a Breira when it comes to a din daraisa, like we were just discussing. The din that we were discussing yesterday about the mess in the house and the doorways becoming tamei is actually daraisa. Yesterday I had said that it's dirabanan, which actually Rashi says earlier in the Masechta. We were discussing a couple of minutes ago why there Rashi says it's dirabanan, and here he says it's halacha moshim sinai, and the Gemara here is saying daraisa. One answer among the various answers is that it's daraisa, that one particular door, the one that you actually take the mess out through, that everything in that doorway is tameh even before you took out the mess, it's midrabanan, that it applies to all the doors. Anyway, so... maybe because you don't know, maybe because in case you change your mind and decide to take them out through a different door, or maybe because when all the doors are closed, it's not obvious really which one you're going to take them out through. Anyway, So that's one possible answer. So to Frankfurt, what Rashi is saying in these two places, be that as it may, in our Gemara, we're saying that the thing of the mess in the house is a deraisa, and therefore Rabbi Oshia would be machmir on Breira with it. So
you don't say Breira.
But you don't say Breira. Whereas in the case of Tumen, is Dirabanan, then he will. Dorash mazutra halacha kerab Oshia. Mazut of Darshan, that the halacha in fact is like Rav Oshia, and in fact as a general rule we do say we generally don't apply Breira in things that are Raisa, but we do apply it in things that are Banan. Another din in this connection, there's actually one of the famous things that the Gemara brings all over the place as far as Breira is the famous Mishnah Halakeach Yain Mibin Akusin. We've already had it a couple of times. I think we had it in Yoma. I think we also had it in Erevin, a case where a person has wine which is Dmai, and he's not and he has to take Truma and Meiser from it, where we say that he's able to designate Truma and Meiser, drink it on Shabbos, and then after Shabbos, the 2% that's left for Truma, the 10% that's left for Meiser, etc., retroactively will consider that was the 2% that was meant for Truma all along. And the reason it works, according to the opinions that it does work, is because it's Dirabanan.
So those would make it work.
Yeah. Right. Amar Shmuel, more on the subject of animals and their tumen. An ox that was fattened up. You have people whose job it was to raise animals and fatten them up so that then people will buy them. An ox from such a person, then it goes according to anybody's feet. Which means, so Rashi says that means even if somebody comes from a different city, somebody has an Erev Tumen from a different city to be able to walk over here on Yom Tov, if he buys that animal, if he picks up that animal on Yom Tov, he's able to take it back to his city. We don't say that it's limited to the tchum of the city that it was in at the beginning of Yom Tov. He bought it on Yom Tov, we're talking about. Well, I mean, he made the arrangements on Yom Tov. I'm gonna pick it up on Yom Tov, and after Yom Tov, we'll figure out the price. Patam, that's what I said, means somebody who fattens up animals. On the other hand, shor shel roya, but an ox that's kept by a shepherd, hareu kodag le'oseir, then it only goes according to the people of that city. What's the difference? So Rashi says the difference is like this. A patam, people want to come from all over to buy a patam's animals, like a higher quality animal. So therefore, even from before Yom Tov, you knew it's going to be available to people from surrounding cities who have an Erev Tchumen to be able to come here, and therefore kind of you have in mind that it should go according to any of their Tchum. Whereas a Shor Shel Roya, a big deal. What do you need to walk to another city for? Your own city has a Roya also. You can pick up animals from him. So therefore, there's no reason to assume that it would go to somebody from a different city. There are a lot of different explanations in Rishonim, though, about the fact here Shmuel seems to be saying that we apply Brera, because we're saying that this Shor Shel Patam, somebody comes and picks it up the next day from a different city, and we allow it to go according to his Tchum, even though at the beginning of Yom Tov it was in our Tchum, and yet before Shmuel was saying yesterday, we had the Shmuel Sazain Brera. He had said that both the Chavis and the animal are Osir when two people buy it for Shutfus. So one way of looking at it is that with some of Farshim explain that indeed, we are talking about Brera over here, but there's a difference. For example, there's the idea that over here, the Patam wants to be able to sell the animal. You know for sure he wants to sell the animal to anybody who will come. So therefore, he himself has in mind before Yom Tov that whoever comes and buys it on Yom Tov, as of now, it should be in their tum. Whereas the two people who buy the animal for sure, not necessarily are they going to end up splitting it, not necessarily are they going to split it 50-50, etc. That's one way of looking at it. And then there's another way of looking at it is we're not dealing with a matter of Brera over here at all, but rather we're dealing with that the Patam himself, for all the various possible reasons, does not want it to be limited to his own Tchum. For example, there's the fact he wants to be, again, he wants to be able to sell it. He wants to be able to sell it. He wants more customers to be able to come. So therefore, again, you know, even before Yom Tov, he already designated that it'll go. Actually, another interesting explanation is that because the Patam has to have customers from all over, the Chachamim were makel and allowed it to be considered as though this ox is hefker. And we're going to learn. We'll have tomorrow a concept that, according to one opinion anyway, something that you of hefker that you find on Yom Tov goes according to your tchum. We had that briefly in Erevin, and we had that in Erevin in connection with rain, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mishnah says, "Ashoyo kli machaverim erev Yom Tov." If somebody had borrowed a keli from his friend erev Yom Tov, we said that it goes according to the borrower's tum, not the lender's. That's pshita. And the answer is loy tzricha. It's not necessary to say only shaloi masri le'elav Yom Tov. What if you came before Yom Tov? You called up your friend before Yom Tov. Can you lend me this? But then you only came and picked it up on Yom Tov. So you might have thought, well then, if you only picked it up on Yom Tov, then he didn't put it in your Rishus from the beginning of Yom Tov. They only talked about it before Yom Tov. He didn't do Meshicha or anything like that.
Right.
So you might think then he didn't go into his Rishus yet. But nevertheless, Kamash Molon, that's the Chiddush, that nevertheless, because they agreed to it before Yom Tov, then it already goes according to his Tchum.
You have to make
Yeah, as a matter of fact, yes. We talk about there's the concept that a shoyl is chayah for anything that happens to the animal or keli or whatever it is that he borrows. You need meshicha in order for it to be in his possession to do that. Yeah.
Without aiding.
No, you don't need aiding. You don't need aiding for anything like that.
If there's
a problem, then you have to deal with. Then you have to have evidence or whatever. But you know, the general in many areas of halacha, in many areas of dini mamonos, the rule is la'ivu sadi el shkari. Witnesses are only needed in case one or another party to the transaction is going to lie. If everybody is going to be telling the truth, or if everybody agrees on the fact, you don't need aiding. As opposed to, I mean, that doesn't apply in everything. Kedushin, for example, you need Edim not because they might be lying, but because without Edim, it's not Chal, right? So that's one of the big differences that they discuss between Edim Kiyum and the Edim, what's the Lashon? Not Edim, it's I forget what the expression is off the top of my head, but whatever, there's Edim that makes the thing happen, and then there's Edim that are just needed for proof that it happened. No, Edim Mesira and Edim Chsima is something different. I can't remember the terms just now, but whatever. When we get to the Babas, we'll have it. actually, when we get to Silvis as well, yeah. And this supports what Rabbi Yochanan said. If somebody borrowed the keli from his friend Erev Yomtiv, even though the friend only gave it to him on Yomtiv, then it goes according to the Shoyal's feet, it goes according to his tchum, which is exactly what we said is the case the Mishnah is talking about. We were medayek in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan said it explicitly. And that's Allah. Then the Mishnah had said, "B'yomtiv k'ragli amashal." But on the other hand, if you borrow keli on yomtiv, then it goes according to the owner's tchum. And again, the question is pshita. Well, obviously, I mean, the tchum takes effect bein hashmashus. So bein hashmashus, it was still in your possession. The answer is leitzricha de rogil v'sholminei. What if it's the kind of thing that the other person usually comes and borrows from you? Ma'ur detema b'rshutei kamokim lei. So you might think, well, you know in advance, this guy is always coming every yomtiv to borrow, or every week to borrow this thing from you. So already, you know, yeah. Kamash Maman, but the Chiddush is no, because Meima Oma, because the lender can still think to himself, Duma Mashkach in a Shachar. No, okay, maybe this time the guy found somebody else, some other yokel to borrow from, but also the Shoyimine, and he went and borrowed from him. So not necessarily does he have in mind before Yom Tov to put it in his Rishus. Yeah. And the Mishnah said, Bechina Isha Shasholom and Chavertar, that also the same thing applies when a woman borrows from her neighbor. We said that spices for a tabshil, or water or salt for a dough. Now we're going to have an interesting story, which also comes into a very difficult piece of Gemara. A bunch of the Mefarshim talk about this next piece of Gemara, this little bit over here, and most of the next Amud, that it's very, very difficult to understand. They use some pretty strange expressions about it. The Pnei Yeshua uses the expression that the whole thing looks like Sefer HaChotam, it looks like a sealed book. The Ksav Sofer writes on it that anybody who can explain this Gemara successfully deserves a big reward.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah. Ki Solik Rab Abba. When Rab Abba came up, when Rab Abba went up, Rab Abba had grown up in Bavel. He was now moving to Eretz Yisrael. So when he was going up, Solik means going up, because Eretz Yisrael was the Gevoyah of the Kalar Rosses. No. It means when he went up to Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
Omar, he said, Yehei Rava, it should be the Eber, Yehi Rotsin, it should be the Ebershter's will, the aim of milsa to discover, that I should say something that will be accepted, that the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael will accept what I say. Kisolik, so when he got there, Ashkechele Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanin Bapapi and Rabbi Zera, he found Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Chanin Bapapi and Rabbi Zera, the Amrila, or a different version is that he found Rabbi Abo, Rabbi Shimon and Pazi, Rabbi Yitzchak Kamcha, the Yastvi Vakari, that they were sitting and discussing our Mishnah, and they were asking, Amai, why is that, why the Mishnah had said that the dough goes Kiragle Shtehen, that it can only go in the common area where both of these women are allowed to walk on Yom Tov. So again, if one of them made an Erev here and the other one made an Erev there, then it's stuck. If the Erevim are 2,000 Amos, 4,000 Amos apart, yeah. So they asked why. The Liftil Mayim Melech Lagabe Issa. Why aren't the water and the salt bottle relative to the dough? I mean, they're a very little thing relative to the volume of the dough.
So it
should be just whoever provided the flour is the one. It goes according to her tchum.
Okay.
Yeah. So Rab Abba answers them, so what? You're telling me that just because there's a little thing, therefore it should be bottle? What if one person had a kav of wheat that got mixed into 10 kavim of wheat from his friend? Are we going to say that the other guy, because he outnumbers you 10-1, he should be able to eat the whole thing and be happy about it, that he got a free cob of wheat? In other words, basically he's saying, so what if it's only a little amount of water and a little amount of salt? It still has significance. It shouldn't be bottle. They laughed at him. So Rab Abba says to them, "Gulsaichu shakli." Did I take your gulsa? Gulsa, Rashi explains, is a nice kind of clothing. And in those days, some of the chachamim used to wear. They would wear talis all day, but underneath that, the layer underneath that would be a tachrich nar. Rashi says a nice kind of wrap. In particular, the Gemara mentions in a number of places that a gulsa was like the special malbush distinguishing a talmud chacham. Gemara talks in a few places, in fact, that as part of the ceremony, when a chacham in those days got in Eretz Yisrael, got smicha, they actually had a gulsa de dahava. They had a gulsa made with gold threads that they put on him as a mark of honor. The regular daily gulsa wasn't with gold threads, but still it was like the distinguishing dress of a talmud chacham. Mm-hmm. So he asks them, "What are you laughing at me? Did I take your gulsa?"
What has that to do with the gulsa?
Wait. That's part of the difficulty that a number of the Mepharshim are talking about. What on earth is going on over here? And why does he bring in the? Why does, first of all, and why is Rav Abba himself bringing in this thing completely out of left field? This top chitin and ten kavim chitin. I mean, just say simple things are not bottle like that. You know, I mean, all over Shas we have things where things are and aren't bottle. Yeah. So especially this ghoul thing. So wait, I'll tell you in a minute what some different people talk about it. And Hodrachikwale, they lasted him some more. Amr of Oshia, said of Oshia says Shapur of Adachikwale. They were doing right in laughing at him. Because Maishnachitin Bitsaurim Dulaikamalahu, after all, why didn't he mention a case he could have just as well said that somebody had a calf of wheat and got mixed in 10 calves of barley? And why did he mention that? Because he knew the havalei min b'she'enim min. He knows then that's one min getting mixed into a different min. Or min b'she'enim min, a bottle. And he knows that if one min gets mixed into a different min, then it can be bottle. Well, then chitin b'chitin nami. Well, even when it comes to wheat, nihid the Rabbi Huda like bottle, it's true according to Rabbi Huda. We had already in Psachim, and the actual main we had in Psachim briefly in connection with not in the case of chametz, but actually we had in connection with chametz is different. It's more strict because Bal Yerah Bal Yamata. There are all cases where chametz can be bottle before Pesach. We had in Sochem actually something briefly about this in connection with that. It says over there that Rabbi Huda said you take a cup of blood from the floor, from all the blood that's spilled on the floor while they were bringing the korban Pesach, and spritz it on the mizbeach in case the blood of somebody's korban spilled on the floor. This way, at least you'll be able to remaster their korban. And the chum tell him how it's bottle and all the other blood. And Rabbi Huda tells them that ain't dam avatel dam, that the mino cannot be bottle. So there's that, the Gemara.
Does that mean that he knows? Oh, yeah. It was
Dhamma Vadam. Well, he said over there, Dhamma. He said over there, I think the expression was Dhamma like Mipto Vadam or something like that.
But
what it is Rashi, Rabbi Yehuda, actually, the Gemara explains that actually Rabbi Yehuda does learn it from a din also involving blood, but involving, we learned about in Yuma. We learned in Yuma that at one point during the Avodah, the Kohen Gadol takes the blood into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, spritzes it, does the whole thing. Then he brings the blood of the Sar Hashem, does the same thing. What was the next thing? We said he mixes the two bowls of blood together. And afterwards, he sprinkles some more, but he sprinkles it on the Parechas, he sprinkles it on the four corners of the Mizbeach. So Rabbi Yehuda says, well, you see from that min b'mino is not bottle. Otherwise, I mean, there's a lot more blood in a power than there's blood in a sir. The blood in a sir should be bottle. And yet the Torah is saying it's not. So obviously min b'mino in a bottle. The Chachamim counter that's different. The Torah makes an exception over there. But we see that Rabbi Yehuda holds of the concept that min b'mino is not bottle. But the Rabbanan is still bottle. But according to the Rabbanan, yes, something that's not the same min is indeed bottle. So Rav Oshi is saying then, what was Rav Abba trying to mention when he said this thing of chitin b'chitin? I mean, even chitin b'chitin, according to the Rabbanan, would be bottle. How much more so, you would think, water and salt into a dough, which is not the same min. So therefore, he says they were right. They were right to laugh at him that he's saying such an odd thing. They say that the Torah makes an exception there. Because the Torah is specifically saying there, then yeah. So let's pause at this point before the continuation, and then I'll tell you a couple of the explanations that they say about why Taka used this odd marshal and why they laughed at him and why what's this business about the Gulsa. So a couple of different explanations that I saw are one of them has to do with the different styles of learning that they had in Eretz Yisrael and in Babel. We might mention in Sanhedrin and in a couple of other places that in Babel their style of learning was more argumentative and competitive. You know, one person says something and everybody jumps on him to try and slug it up. I mean that's the meat and potatoes of the Gemara all the time, yeah. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael it was more collegial. It was more, the Gemara talks about Makal Noyam versus Makal Chovlim. In Eretz Yisrael, they were more gentle. In Babel, they were like, you know, harsher and stricter with each other. So when Rav Abba is coming to Eretz Yisrael, he's saying, Yehei Rav and De'ema Milad to Skabel. I hope that I'll say something which will be accepted. One way of looking at it, he's saying, I want to be able to say something that will show the B'nai Eretz Yisrael that our style of learning in Babel was a good style. So therefore, when he sees them discussing this, he immediately jumps in with this argument of his, and they laugh at him, basically saying, "What kind of a style of learning is that? That's not the kind of thing we do over here." So then he says to them, "Did I take your gulsa? Am I trying to take away from you your distinction as some of the chachamim? I'm agreeing that your way is good, but at least accept that mine is good also." And they didn't accept that either. That's one explanation. Let me see what else. There's an interesting one. Well, first of all, actually, you get out of the story that Rav Abba davened for something and it didn't come true. He asked that he should say something that'll be accepted, and they end up laughing at him twice. The Chassam Sofer says actually a very interesting thing on it. He says a person should daven shalei akasha b'dvar halacha, we learned in Barakas, that I won't stumble in a matter of halacha. But the reason shouldn't be that he should get covered, basically. When Rav Abba is saying, let me go up there and let me say something that'll be accepted, what do you mean, davka, that your opinion has to be accepted? And you should be davening that you'll say something that they'll discuss. Not davka that they'll actually come to conclusion according to you, but at least that they'll consider it worthy of discussion. So therefore, it was an issue of gaiva, and therefore this ended up happening. Having said that, though, I saw something almost, which is in a way almost the opposite of that, from Rabbi Yoelish, the Satmar Rebbe. He says something like this, that Rabbi Abba actually held himself very low. He felt like when somebody is learning, he felt that when he says something in learning, you need somebody else later on to be relearning it in order for him to get the schus of it. Like he himself learning it is not going to be enough. So therefore he's asking you, hey, Rav, the aim of Milut is Kabbal. I hope when I come up to Eretz Yisrael that I say something that halavai they'll accept it and they'll learn, and then at least I'll get the credit for it. They heard what he said and they laughed at him as if to say, you don't need that kind of thing. You're a great person on your own. You don't need other people to accept what you're saying. So then he mentions the thing about the gulsa to say, like, you know, it's not like I'm trying to strip you of your clothing, you know. It's not like it, and then again they laughed at him as if to say, like, you know, you don't need to worry about that kind of thing. You're on a level beyond that kind of thing. You don't need to worry about other people taking your clothing and clothing themselves. As far as the substantive argument, what exactly he's bringing in with this, how what about the general concept of bits, all that stuff, I think let's learn till the end, and then I printed out myself here a couple of things to jog my memory to help explain it. But first let's try to at least learn the words. Amalei Rav Safra. So Rav Safra says to Rav Hoshi, Rav Hoshi had said they did good to laugh at him, that his argument kind of falls apart when you analyze it. Amalei Rav Safra. So Rav Safra says to Rav Hoshi, Moshe, Shafra Kamrit. Moshe, is that a right thing to say? Why are you agreeing with them? He doesn't have a problem with the laughter, but why are you agreeing with them against Rav Abba? We can bring proof to what Rav Abba is saying. What does he mean by Moshe? So here, actually, Rashi says, this is the expression, Moshe Shafu Kamrit, we have in a number of places in the Gemara. We had it in Sukkah, we had it in Shabbos, it's in a half dozen places in the Gemara. Usually, Rashi explains that it means something along the lines of that you're a Talmud Chacham as great as Moshe, how could you say such a thing, or something along those lines. Here, Rashi explains that it means he's swearing by the covered of Moshe. I swear by Moshe, Shafu Kamrit, is that a right thing to say? So why is he saying different than everywhere else? So the Noda Behuda writes in one of his Shuvahs that the reason is because here he's speaking to Rav Oshia. This isn't the famous Rav Oshia. This is the one we had before who argued with Rav Yechon, and this is a later Rav Oshia, who's not necessarily the Gadol Ador. You can't say on him, Moshe, you're the Gadol Ador. Not when Rav Zera and Rav Yechon and the rest of them are there. So therefore, necessarily, it has to be that he's swearing by the covenant of Moshe. Rabbi Yoelish also in his thing over there explains that something along the lines of that also you have there that Moshe was buried in the desert in order to help the Yidden who are in the desert over there, so that he'll lead them, you know, as in the famous song over there, you know, to lead us to Geula. So something along the same lines also, that, you know, with this kind of argument that you're saying, you know, Rav Abba is saying about himself that just my learning is not enough, I need other people to learn it. You know, how does that fit with the covenant of Moshe, where, you know, he's buried in the desert. He doesn't need somebody else to be, you know, he has the people following him. He doesn't need others to improve on what he did, basically. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, the question is, v'lo shmielahu, didn't those Amoraim who laughed at Rav Abba, didn't they hear of Hab Amar Rav Chiyach Chesfa Meshmeid Rav, this that Rav Chiyach Chesfa said in the name of Rav, Habora Tzroris Migona Shachabera, if somebody picks out pebbles from somebody else's pile of wheat, from somebody else's storehouse of wheat, Chayav L'Shalom Lo'ez Meichitim, you have to pay him for the equivalent value of wheat. Why is that? There's a certain amount. When a person buys a bushel of wheat or whatever amount of it is a wheat, it's a normal thing. There's going to be some rocks and pebbles and dirt and whatever in there. You can't get it 100% clean. So the average person expects there's going to be, you know, in 100 pounds of wheat, there's going to be, you know, three ounces of rocks.
And there's water and chicken.
What? Yeah.
There's water and chicken.
So if somebody so if somebody goes and picks out those 3 ounces of rocks, he's now the person can't go put in more rocks. There's only, you're allowed to sell the ones that originally came with. You're not allowed to add new ones of your own. So therefore, effectively, you've made him lose out on that amount of wheat. Now he has to make sure he gives an actual 100 pounds of wheat. So therefore, you owe him the mechitim. Alma kilo chasre. So we see that in that case, why he only took out rocks? Why is he having to pay for wheat? Because he took out from the midah. Now the owner of the wheat has to now fill in that amount, the weight of the rocks in, or the volume of the rocks, whatever, in wheat. So because the other guy made him lose the volume of what he's trying to sell, so therefore he owes him. Hachanami kilochasre. The same way over here, you can argue that the same way you can argue then that yes, Mayim and Melach should not be bottled. Just like the rocks are not bottled in the wheat, and if somebody picks them out, he's chayev. The same way over here, we should say that the water and the salt do have an identity of theirs within the Issa. And yes, therefore, like the Mishnah is saying, it should be kedag l'shtein.
Yeah, means the midah.
Kila means the midah. Yeah. Amale Abaya, but Abaya said to Rav Safra. So, v'loshani le lamavin mamon sheyesh le tovin lamamon sheyin le tovin. Don't you consider that there's a distinction between money which somebody is looking to collect versus money where somebody is not looking to collect? Namely, in the case of the rocks in the wheat, yes, you know, the person is now going to sell this wheat to somebody else, and he realizes now it's a pound or whatever it is short, and he's going to have to fill it in. That's mamon sheyesh le tovin. He has a claim against the other person. You took away the rocks. You took away, you know, what I could have sold these rocks for the price of wheat. In our case over here, the one woman lent the water and the salt to somebody else to make a dough on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov itself, she's not going to be demanding payment. When might she demand payment? She might be demanding payment after Yom Tov. So you shouldn't consider it mamon. So there should be a difference.
I mean, even on the fact that there's less color, things like this sort of replaces a certain amount of color.
No. Just, you know, I lent you salt. After Yom Tov, then I want to borrow an equivalent amount of salt from you or whatever. I want you to pay me for it. Wow. Sometimes you have people who are machbid on each other like that. Sure, I'll lend you the stuff after Yom Tov, but after Yom Tov, let's figure out what the actual value is. Yeah. So that's mom and shame like Tobin, because now on Yom Tov, nobody's trying to claim it. So there is still a difference. Just because you have that case of the rocks in the wheat doesn't prove anything about our Mishnah. Amalei, Rav Safra answers back, Litai Meich, so new, according to your logic, Had Amar Rav Chista, let's consider what Rav Chista said, Nevela B'Tela B'Shchuta, that Nevela can be bottled in meat that was shefted. Namely, we're going back to what we said according to Rabbi Yehuda. We said before that min b'minoy according to Rabbi Yehuda is never batal, but that's only where the two things can never be identical. If it's possible that the two things that are mixed together should ever have the same status in halacha, then yes, one can or rather the other way around. If they can never have the same status in halacha, then they're considered min b'she'en and minu, even though physically they're saying the same kind of thing. Well, the example we're talking about is over here. If you have a kezayis of nevela gotten mixed in to a bunch of kezayisim of kosher meat. Now, nevela, besides that you're not allowed to eat it, if you touch nevela If you touch a kazayas and nevela from any animal, it makes you tamei. Tamei tumas erev, but still tamei. If truma touches it, the truma becomes tamei, etc. But now, if that one kazayas of nevela gets mixed into a bunch of kazayas of shchuta, we say that it can be batel. Lefisha e efsher l'shchuta shita'as nevela, because it can never happen that the shchuta, which is the majority of it here, can ever have the status of nevela. It can never become the meat that was shechted can never become an avatuma to the same extent that the nevela can. It can never become that same status of tuma.
But that's just regarding tuma.
Yeah, we're talking about as far as tuma. As far as eating it, that's a different thing.
As far as
eating it is a different issue, because they're theoretically, actually, all you need, theoretically, minatoda anyway, all you need is two pieces of kosher meat and then one piece of tzreifa meat, and it'll be batel chad v'tzreifa, yeah.
So tzreifa is not batel, but the meat would be...
It could be batel as far as eating it, right. But on the other hand, shchuta ain't a batela b'nevela, but a piece of shchuta is not batel in nevela. So if it was so meaning, in other words, like this: when we're saying nevela batela b'shchuta, would mean therefore. So if you have this nevela among all the pieces of shchuta, then we consider if somebody touches it, he doesn't become tamei. You have one piece of nevela and 100 pieces of shchuta. Somebody touches any piece from the mixture, or somebody just touches the mixture as a whole, he doesn't become tamei. Because the nevela is batel. Because the nevela can never become something like the shchuta. And therefore it's considered min b'shein and minoi, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore it can be batel. However, shchuta ain't a batel of a nevela. But the reverse is not true. A piece of kosher meat cannot be batel among many pieces of nevela. In the sense, obviously you're not allowed to eat them because they have more nevela than shchuta. But what we mean is, if you were to touch a piece from this mixture, it's now a suffix whether you're tamei. It's a suffix. Most of it is shchuta, but really one piece of nevela in there. We're saying, most of it is nevela. Most of it is nevela. One piece is shchuta, but now if you touch any piece, that shchuta still maintains its identity. That one is not matamayu. All the nevela ones are matamayu. So therefore, if you touch any individual one of them, you don't know whether you're tamei or not. It's a suffix tuma. Now, why is that? Because it is possible for nevela to become become tahar like shchuta. Namely, if the kazayas or all the kazayas in nevela end up spoiling and reaching the point where they're not even roy, where they're not roy to eat anymore, then they're not tamei. Then they don't make you tamei anymore. That when the Torah talks about nevela, the expression it uses, Rashi says, "Lagera sheber sharecha titnana," that you should give nevela to a ger, to a ger, meaning a ger toshav, to eat. Once it's spoiled, once it's rotten, and a ger toshav can't eat it anymore, it's not considered nevela. It's not metame. So therefore, nevela is able to become like shchuta. So therefore, we would consider it min b'mina, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, min b'mina is not batel. Yeah. It becomes min b'mina, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, min b'mina is never batel. Use this one first. So what do we see from that? What's the relevance? Hachi nami. So Rav Safra says, are you telling me then also in this din, that if the nevela or the shchuta, as the case may be, did not have owners, that it would be, if it did have owners, that it wouldn't be batel? You're trying to make a distinction between whether something is batel, whether it has owners, whether it's mom and shiesh letovim, whether anybody is looking to collect it or not. But this din of nevela and shchuta, this din of nevela and shchuta doesn't depend on who owns what.
In other words, since there's no bialim in shchuta.
No, there could be, there could be not. The din doesn't make a distinction.
Right.
The din doesn't make a distinction about that. So therefore in our case over here, as far as the pebbles in the wheat versus the water in the dough, it shouldn't make a difference. Either way, if you're gonna say bittel, you should say bittel. If you don't say bittel, you don't say bittel. V'chitema hachinami, so maybe you might answer, maybe taka, there's a difference. Maybe indeed, if there's owners, it's not bottle. Maybe once there's dinim mominus involved, maybe then we don't apply bittul. You can't say that. V'hatanya, because we learn in a braisa, the braisa actually doesn't explicitly say this. It actually says what we deduce it from something that we learned in Eruvin, Amar of Yechon Menuri, Chesse Hefker Koinim Shvisa, that an object of Hefker are Koinim Shvisa, they acquire wherever they are at the beginning of Shabbos. We talked in Erevin about the water. Wherever it is at the beginning of Shabbos, it's Koinim Shvisa. Aspicha Inlan Bailim, because even though they don't have owners, Doimin, Kamish Yeshlan Bailim, we consider it as if they have owners. So therefore we see there's no difference whether it has owners or not. The Chesse Hefker, by definition, have no owner. And yet we're saying that, there's no difference. There's no difference. Whoever finds it, that's what we were talking about before. Whoever finds an object of Hefker can carry it only 2,000 amos in the direction from where he found it. So even though it doesn't have bialim, it's still considered a chshivos. It's still considered that where it was at the beginning of Shabbos has a chshivos. So by the same token, then, that's in our back to our Mishnah. Even if we were to consider the water and salt hefker in the sense that it's mom and shein lo tovin, the woman who lent the water and the salt is not going to be collecting it on Yom Tov. Nevertheless, it should be considered. It has a makom shvita.
Yes, but since we're saying that mom and shein tovin lo, perhaps not.
But that's what we're arguing is that we see from that case of hefker that there is no difference whether it's mom and sheyesh lo tovin or mom and shein lo tovin. You still it still has a tum. So we're back to that the water and the salt should be considered. They even if you want to consider them hefker, we're saying it doesn't matter mom and sheyesh le tovin, mom and shein le tovin. Even if you want to consider them hefker, they still have a makom shvisa. And therefore Rav Abba is right in the original discussion when Rav Abba is saying the water and the salt should not be bottled, and they laughed at him. He's right. Even if the water and salt, even if you want to compare the water and salt to an object that you found in the street that has no bialim, it still has a makom shvisa. It still has a tchum of its own.
Yes. Consider it as hefker.
Amalei, Sabaya asks him back, how can you compare a case of Isser, a case of Tchumen, in other words, or actually a case of a bittul in the matter of Tchum of Atara, to Mammon, to a financial matter? Isser a bottle, Mammon a loy bottle. An Isser can indeed be bottle, the Tchumah can be bottle, but the Mammon is not bottle, yeah.
Never any bottle in Mammon.
No, in other words, going back, for example, to...
to our case?
Yeah, so... what we're saying is, therefore, that we don't say like Rav Abba's original argument. You don't say just because one person's one kav of wheat fell into 10 kavim, therefore it's going to be bottle.
Because it's a davar mammon.
But fine, we're not saying in the Mishnah that we want to be mevatel the mammon. We're not saying that we're mevatel her ownership of it. We're saying we want to be mevatel her tum of it. You can't necessarily compare the two. Maybe you could say that yes, the water and the water and the salt is still considered to be in her ownership, but we take it out of her tum. Yeah. So now, like I said, there's a lot of Rishonim and Achronim spill a lot of ink trying to figure out what on earth was going on in this whole Amud with all these arguments back and forth. I mentioned before that some of them point out how difficult it is. I think it's also the Pnei Yeshua uses an expression one person is arguing one thing and the other person comes up with an argument completely out of left field that seems to have nothing to do with it. So there's one somewhat detailed explanation from Nesiva, one of the important Mefarshim on Choshen Mishpat, that basically, the discussion we're trying to figure out over here is when something is bottled, do we say that takes off the ownership from it? Do we say once the thing is bottled among a roiv, then you no longer have ownership of it? So Rav Abba is saying that. So Rav Abba starts off the argument by saying, after all, if your one kav of wheat gets mixed up into 10 kavim of the other one, and the 10 kavim of the other one. Not only the guy does not have the right to eat all of it without paying you, but it's actually later on it comes like this. Actually, Rav Abba is saying, suppose that in between afterwards the price of wheat goes up. Do you owe him for how much the calf was worth at the time it fell in, or do you owe him at the time as much as it's worth at the time when you're going to pay him back? But no, we said Rav Abba is arguing that Rav Abba is arguing that actually no, they're considered partners in it. So no, you owe him according to its original value. It's like it's not considered that it's butl. It's considered rather you have 11 kavim of wheat, of which 10 belong to you and 1 belong to me. And if the price later goes up, then I share in it. If you know, yeah. So then
the beginning.
Yeah. So then the Gemara, then Rabbi Hoshea had argued that, wait a minute, why is he not mentioning wheat and barley? Why is he only mentioning wheat and wheat? Must be because because wheat would indeed really be butl in the sense that you're not considered an owner of it anymore. The guy just has to pay you money for it later on. And then we said, then we brought in the thing about the pebbles and the wheat, where, you know, the pebbles, the pashtas are hefker, and yet we're saying if you take out the pebbles, if the pebbles are mixed into the wheat, they lose their status of hefker. If somebody else takes them out now, he's actually caused you to lose money. So therefore, by the same token, just as the pebbles become no longer hefker, so the water and the salt becomes it loses its original ownership, it loses its original bailus.
Pebbles.
Which therefore contradicts what Rav Abba is saying. Rav Abba is saying you keep an ownership of that water and salt, like the Mishnah is saying, and that's why it can only be in the tchum where both of you can walk. We're saying, based on the pebbles, you see pebbles are hefker, but yet once they're mixed into your wheat, they're not. They become yours. They're no longer hefker. But the same thing in reverse. The water and the salt, once it's mixed into your dough, should be right. Should be bottle, right. And then we got into maybe the difference between hefker, which yes, hefker can lose its status, like the pebbles, like mom and chain the toivim, versus something that has owners, the water and the salt. After all, the woman who lent it to her friend does own it.
Even though it's bottle, it's still.
But even though it's bottle, as far as a matter of halacha, but nevertheless, you still have an ownership of it. And if you have an ownership of it, then you have a tchum on it.
At least for the value that.
Yeah. Then you have a tchum on it. So then we say, well, what about the nevela and the shchuta business? We didn't make a distinction between whether there's owners or not. Evidently, once it's bottle, it loses its ownership. And then we brought in that even if the nevela or the shchuta has owners, nevertheless, it's completely bottle.
And therefore loses its ownership. So why don't you say the same thing about the salt?
That's where we're going back and forth on this argument.
Right.
So then we mention whatever, you know, an object of hefker. We're saying that we're treating an object of hefker as if it has owners. We're saying it's koine shvisa. So even by the case of nevela and shchuta, when can you apply bittul? Would only be if they all belong to the same person, and we don't find that. So then we say there's a difference between Easter and Mammon. Even Mammon of Hefker isn't bottle. The matter of the pebbles is different because the pebbles, that's not really a matter of Mammon. It's rather you've caused him a loss, but not the pebbles themselves are worth anything. So now we're going to get to what the ultimate reason is why we want to say that this water and salt keep their tum, which is after all what the Mishnah said. And therefore, that you can't bring them from one to the other. So, the time am I? So now, what's the reason why we want to make this distinction? Why do we want to say that even if the bilos, even if it loses its bilos, or even if it loses its identity in the dough, nevertheless, it still keeps its tum? Abaya omer gzeira shematasa isa b'shutfus. Abaya says the reason is it's a gzeira because you might end up. What if I'm not lending you the water and the salt, and you're making a dough that you yourself are going to keep? What if we actually are making it that we're going to be partners in this dough?
We didn't say that in the Mishnah.
If that were to happen, then you're going to say each one can take her half and go? Not necessarily. Especially we said before, in Brera. There's a possibility, in Brera.
Right.
So then, because of a Gzera, to prevent that possibility, therefore, even if she just lends her water and salt, and they're going to end up, and the dough is going to end up belonging to one person, nevertheless, we limit its home to only where both of them can go. Rava Amar, Rava gives a different reason. Tavlin, the Taima Avidi, spices are made to give a taste to the stew. But timer like bottle, and something that gives a taste is not bottle because it's something that's like it's essential. So Rashi says that Abaya and Rava are not really arguing. Each one is giving a reason that applies to a different case. Abaya's reason applies to a dough. Rava's reason applies to a stew, to a tapshul. Which is, yeah. Tosfos says differently. Tosfos says that actually they are arguing. Abaya is giving his reason by dough, as they might make it the shutfus. And he says, well, the same thing applies to a stew. They also might make it b'shutfus and then think to divide it. Whereas Rava says that the Rava gives a reason about the dough, and he says about the stew rather, because tavlin are made for taste. And so he says the same reason would apply to the dough because an essential part of the dough is the water and the salt. So they're considered also avidul taima effectively. And one more, but Rav Ashi gives a different reason why we say that the water and the salt are also, why you're not allowed to move it out of the tomb of both of them. Mishum to have a davar sheyesh lematirin, because it's a davar sheyesh lematirin. After Yom Tov, you'll be able to carry it wherever you want. V'chol davar sheyesh lematirin, after the elef leg bottle, and anything that davar sheyesh lematirin, as we learned back at the beginning of the Masechta, even is not bottled even in 1,000. And Tosfos points out, even though we're talking min b'she'en and minoy over here, because again, you know, water and salt versus dough versus flour, because we're being machmir over here with tumen as if it was min b'minoy. Because again, we said before, because there's a mammon aspect in it also. And also Tosfos says a different reason is because not really min b'she'en and minoy. Ultimately, a dough is made out of these ingredients. The water and the salt are actually part of the dough. You can't really separate one part from the other.
One thing, basically.
Yeah. That's Tosfos' second thing, essentially. Yeah. Yeah. So therefore, they're all considered one min. Yeah.
Three.